Hello again, this is Debbie back with part two of the e-edition for the Herald and Review from Decatur on Wednesday, June 1st, 2016, starting as we usually do, part two with the death notices. Decatur, Barker Cecil L. Cecil L. Barker, 76, in Decatur, Illinois, passed away Monday, May 30th, 2016 at St. Mary's Hospital, Decatur, Illinois. Funeral services will be 6 p.m. Friday, June 3rd, at Bitlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with visitation 2 hours prior to service time at the funeral home. Burial will be in the Grace Lutheran Cemetery in Strasburg, Illinois, at a later date. Bitlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, is handling the arrangements. Argenta, Cooper, Judith F. Judith F. Cooper, 68, of Paso Robles, California, passed away along with her daughter, Tierney Cooper McCann. Private family graveside services will be held in Friends Creek Cemetery, Argenta, Illinois. A celebration of her life will be open to the public at 200 East Broadway, Argenta, on Saturday, June 11th, from 3 to 5. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, is assisting the family. Messages of condolence may be sent to the funeral home on site or on the web. Decatur, Olson, Don Eric. Don Eric Olson, 85, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away on Friday, May 27, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Memorial services will be on Thursday, June 23, 2016, at 10 a.m. St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Decatur. Burial will be in Camp Butler National Cemetery, Riverton. Memorials may be made to the Cross Fund at the St. Paul's Lutheran Church. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Bitlinger and Earl Funeral Home at their website. Argenta, Cooper McCann, Tierney. Tierney Cooper McMahon, 37, of Clovis, California, passed away on May 7, 2016 in Clovis, California, along with her mother, Judith Cooper. Private family graveside services will be held in Friends Creek Cemetery, Argenta, Illinois. A celebration of her life open to the public will be held at 200 East Broadway, Argenta, on Saturday, June 11th, from 3 to 5. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, is assisting the family. Messages of condolence may be sent to the family at the funeral at Dawson Wyckoff website. Cater, Cooper, William A. William A. Cooper, 66, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Saturday, May 28, 2016, in his residence, surrounded by family. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, June 4th, in Bitlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. Visitation will be held from 11 to 1 at the funeral home. Burial will be at Boiling Springs Cemetery. Memorials may be given to the ALS Association or DMH Hospice. Decatur, Gustin, Gregory Tuck. Gregory Tuck Gustin, 70, of Mokena, Illinois, died on May 28, 2016, surrounded by his family. Visitation Wednesday, June 1st, that was today. Funeral tomorrow, Thursday, June 2nd, 9:30 a.m., from the funeral home to St. Mary Church Mass, 10 a.m. Interment will take place Thursday, June 2nd, 2:30 at Mount Gilead Cemetery in Decatur. The interment will be open to all guests. For information, call 708-479-1210 or Vandenberg Funeral Home. I'm going to reread the time of the funeral because I think I got confused. Funeral Thursday, June 2nd, 9:30 a.m. from the funeral home, St. Mary's Mass, 10 a.m. Interment will take place Thursday, June 2nd, 3:30 at Mount Gilead Cemetery. Decatur, Mayberry, Robert G. Robert G. Mayberry, 83, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, May 28, 2016, Carl Hospital, Champaign. A service to celebrate Robert's life will be held at noon on Thursday, June 2nd, at Life Four Square Church. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation 2 hours prior to the service at the church. Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel is assisting the family with arrangements. Robert will be laid to rest in Harristown Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be directed to the Life Four Square Church. Cater, Tertacha, Ruth Ann. Ruth Ann Duffer Tertacha, 57, of Decatur, passed away on Tuesday, May 31, 2016, at McKinley Court, Decatur, Illinois. Graveside services will be held on Thursday, June 2, at 3 p.m. at the Harristown Cemetery, Harristown, Illinois. Brittinger Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, is handling the arrangements. Decatur, Davis. Sean Newton. Sean Newton Davis went to be with our Lord on May 22, 2016. Celebration of life service will be noon Thursday in Calvary Southern Baptist Church. Burial will be 10 a.m. Friday in Macon County Memorial Park, Harristown. Decatur. White, Janice Jean. Janice Jean Rice White, 79, passed away May 21, 2016 at her home in Arizona. A celebration of life will be at New Beginnings Church of God in Decatur on June 5th with a visitation at 12:30, followed by a service at 1:30 p.m. And that concludes the obituaries for Wednesday, June 1st, 2016, in the e-edition for the Herald and Review, Decatur. Continuing in the life session, eating from the garden of artist Claude Monet. Author shares artist's passion for art and food. This is by Jane Amison, a Lee News Service writer. When we think of Claude Monet, his impressionistic paintings with their soft focus and lush, bountiful gardens at Giverny, often immortalized in his art, come to mind. But Monet also appreciated wonderful food, and besides his many flower and water gardens, his potager, French for kitchen gardener, tended to acres of fruits and vegetables to be used in feeding his family and friends. As someone who likes to cook and garden, the book Monet's Palette Cookbook, The Artist in His Kitchen Garden at Giverny by Eileen Boardman and Derek Fell, Gibbs Smith, 2015, $30, is compelling with its absolutely gorgeous photos and reproductions of Monet's paintings, as well as its many recipes. Monet was what we'd term a farm-to-fork foodie. Free-range chickens, ducks, and geese roamed the kitchen garden. He believed in the healthy benefits of farm-fresh foods, and he traveled the world looking for not only for new scenes to paint, but also new edibles, bringing back scrapbooks filled with recipes and packets of seeds to plant. The spectacular increase in home vegetable gardens, even on rooftops in urban areas, the demand for fresh, locally grown, and organically raised vegetables, and the proliferation of farmers markets nationwide is evidence that people aspire to the model that Monet established with his kitchen garden and passion for good food, the authors write. Through recipes and beautiful photographs, Monet's Palette Cookbook captures the essence of Monet's cherished way of life. Choosing a few recipes to share among the many in the book was difficult, but since asparagus season's upon us, was also held in high regard by Monet, who made sure that his cook, Marguerite, prepared it two ways, including lightly steamed to make it tender, but not enough to have it lose its crisp, nutty flavor. The authors also include a recipe of the spears dressed with an olive, caper, and orange relish that Monet surely would have liked, as it is similar to the tapenade that he enjoyed in his painting trips along the French Riviera. Though the authors call for it to be chilled, but also note that asparagus can be served warm or at room temperature. Dessert, Boardman and Fell write that given the proliferation of apples in Normandy, it isn't surprising that some variation of an apple tart is the signature dessert of the region. It was also a favorite of Monet and his family. They continue noting the painter and his wife Alice brought back the recipe for Tarte Tatin, the renowned upside-down caramelized apple tart from their stays at Hotel Tatin in Lourneau-Brévent, about 100 miles north of Paris. Quote, Monet painted a seductive version of an apple tart in a famous canvas titled Les Galettes. The cakes. End of quote. End of article. Next article, catching up with Cassius. 10 years later, young woman returns to hospital, gave her new life. This is by Michael Vasquez, Tribune News Service writer. Miami, more than 10 years after her first surgery at Jackson Memorial Hospital, Marley Cassius is still grateful. I'm so happy to be able to be back here, the 23-year-old resident of Port-au-Prince, Heidi said, while speaking in the same hospital where doctors saved her life in 2005. The first surgery to move a 16-pound tumor from Cassia's face made the then-teenager internationally famous. Her struggles with a rare form of polyostatic fibrous dysplasia, a condition that causes bones to swell and become jelly-like, attracted widespread media attention. Cassius was featured on the Discovery Channel. She has her own Wikipedia page. Cassius also has dreams of becoming a photographer, she said during a press conference. Through an interpreter, she told the gathered reporters, "I would love to be one of you." Cassius traveled to Miami this week with a group of about 150 Haitian nurses in celebration of National Nurses Week. The health-saving care that Cassius received at Jackson came through Jackson Health Foundation's International Kids Fund and a Haitian charity, Good Samaritan for a Better Life. Doctors at Jackson donated their time, and the Jackson Health Foundation received more than $100,000 in donations to support Cassius. All told, the young woman has had about 10 surgeries at Jackson. The first of those surgeries in 2005 lasted nearly 16 hours. "When this child came to us, she was in very bad condition. She couldn't eat, she couldn't breathe," said Nira Del Valle, senior director of major gifts at the Jackson Health Foundation. Del Valle said Cassius had gone through an amazing transformation that improved both her health and her confidence. "Right now, she's able to live a normal life. She's on Facebook, she has friends, she has a better outlook on life." At one point in her talk with reporters, Cassius became teary-eyed. She said they were tears of joy. "I'm overwhelmed," she said. Although the treatment Cassius received at Jackson saved her life, the road to recovery hasn't always been easy. Because of the extensive damage caused by the original tumor, Cassius had to relearn how to speak and swallow. There's also been follow-up surgeries. In 2014, for example, she underwent several procedures to open up a closed nasal passage and to replace two nasal tubes. She spent months in the hospital. In the future, there may be additional cosmetic surgeries to further repair her face. At home in Haiti, Cassius hasn't attended school since the catastrophic earthquake of 2010, which destroyed her special needs school. But in dealing with those obstacles, Cassius now has an extensive support network of doctors, including her older sister, Stelcy, who was inspired to become a physician because of Cassius' condition. Jeanette Eugene, a nurse who co-founded Good Samaritan for a Better Life, the Haitian charity, said Cassius' life is far different from what was before the surgeries. Before 2005, she said, Cassius' condition was simply getting progressively worse, and her family had no ability to help her. Marley was left in her room to die because there was no hope. No physician could save her life, Eugene said. End of that article. Continuing on this page, learn how to grow herbs, flowers for lotions, scrubs, and more. This is by Carrie Erickson, AP writer. Spa treatments from facials to body scrubs are luxuriating and can be invigorating or soothing depending upon our needs. The bad news is that they're also very expensive. But even an inexperienced gardener can plant the necessary ingredients to help in creating his or her own spa experience. You can grow many of the herbs and flowers to use for making lotions, soaps, and scrubs, said Kathy Fox, manager at Leo's Feed and Garden Center in Cedar Lake. Cut and dried flowers like lavender can be put in sachets and placed under your pillow to help for a soothing sleep. Mints like spearmint, pineapple, peppermint, and apple can be made into invigorating lotions, scrubs, and soaps. There's so much you can do. In her latest book, The Herb Lover Spa Book, create a luxury spa experience at home with fragrant herbs from your garden, St. Lynn's Press, 2015-1895, Sue Getz describes designing a spa garden as a way to create the perfect environment to relax and rejuvenate. It's an oasis of sweet-smelling and colorful blossoms, hardscape, and comfortable furniture, a place where we can harvest plants for making products to use at home. Using herbs to make soaps and lotions is fairly simple, said Fox, noting that these can be used at home and given away as gifts. You can buy glycerin from a pharmacy and mix it with rose water, rose petals, lavender, or herbs like rosemary and lemon balm. In her book, Getz, who lives in the Northwest and works with clients, and works with clients in personalizing garden space from the seasonal tasks to the design of larger projects, features recipes for making a variety of herbal spa treatments. They include scalp tingle mint shampoo, chamomile eye soother, peppermint foot soak, and cooling herbal foot powder, which calls for dried lemon, thyme, parsley, and peppermint leaves. When deciding what to plant, keep in mind soothing herbs include lavender and calendula, which are gentle and calming, while rosemary is considered cleansing and antibacterial. Lemon verbena and lemon balm are both healing and refreshing. Scented geranium are good for mature skin. But rejuvenation also comes from within, Fox and Getz are quick to point out. Teas to help make you feel calmer and relaxed can be made from lemon balm or chamomile or sweetened with stevia, which you can grow and is a natural sweetener, Fox said. There is something about wrapping your hands around a steaming mug of tea that sets the day right, Getz said. You can create your own signature blend by mixing the dried herbs with green chia leaves. All you need to do is bring water to a boil, transfer it to a warm glass or ceramic teapot, and add some fresh herbs. Let it steep for at least 10 minutes or depending on how strong you want to, even longer. The following recipes are from the Herb Lover Spa Book. It's a 7-ounce starting out with a simple herb soap, 7-ounce bar of pure soap, glycerin, olive oil, or other natural-based non-fragrance soap, a tablespoon of dried herb of choice, and 8 drops essential oil made from the same herb. So you finally grate the soap bar in small shavings with a cheese grater. Melt slowly over a double boiler on the stove until the soap becomes completely liquid, keeping careful to watch and never allow to boil or burn. Let cool slightly and stir in remaining ingredients. Pour liquid into molds or roll into balls and allow to harden. An oatmeal soak includes this: 1 cup of rolled oats, 1 cup dried lemon verbena leaves, 1 cup dried lavender buds, and 1 cup of dried rosebuds and petals. In a large bowl, mix all the ingredients together. Use your hands to help the rose and lemon verbena combine with the smaller ingredients. Place the mix in muslin bags and store for use at any time. Or you can layer the ingredients in a mason jar and either save it or give it as a gift. This blend can also be ground to a fine powder that disperses easily in water. To use, hang the bag from the tub faucet as the bath is filling up. When the water is turned off, float the herb bag in the water. To gain the full benefits, allow for a bath time of at least 15 minutes. So it goes on. There's a floral sugar scrub with sugar, coconut oil, vitamin E, and fresh rose petals. Put the sugar, coconut oil, and rose petals in a glass jar. Pierce the vitamin E. Squeeze it into the mix. To use, dampen skin with a generous amount of floral scrub. Massage on the skin with a gentle circular motion. Use caution around scratched or irritated areas of the skin. Rinse off with warm water. That's the end of the life section here in the paper for today. Article from the sports page, The Sage of Monticello. This is by Bill Welt, who's an H&R staff writer. So much has changed in the IHSA during Randy Moss's coaching and administrative career. There's more classes, more conference instability, new bylaws, including the multiplier and the success factor, and fewer three-sport athletes. It all seemed to spiral out of control, but nothing gnaws at Moss more than the conference changes. It's only fitting that he's stepping away from Monticello before the Okaw Valley Conference, steeped in tradition that stretches back to 1925, dissolves in 2017. I was an Okaw Valley Conference member coming into Monticello, and I'm leaving it as an Okaw Valley Conference member, Moss said. I'll be glad for that. Moss isn't retiring bitter or angry as the school's athletic director and assistant principal. He planned this 4 years ago, and after 22 years as a Sage, he was ready to spend more time with his family and his St. Bernard Raider, who's named after the best NFL team ever, he said in a farewell note. It's going to be difficult. Oh, it's going to be different without it, and I don't know what's going to be like without it, Moss said. I feel like it's time to do something else. Moss isn't ditching sports altogether. He still plans to officiate basketball games, something he's done for the past 8 years, and maybe he will become more involved with the IHSA. One thing's clear, he'll never get away from sports. If I'm going to watch something, I'm going to watch a sporting event on TV, Moss said. I really enjoy athletics. I like to be involved in it. Moss wanted to dedicate his life to athletics since playing basketball beginning in high school at Highland St. Paul and all the way through college at then NAIA Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri. I think even in high school, I knew I wanted to coach because being the point guard of the basketball team, you kind of expected to be a coach on the floor, Moss said. You got to know where everybody's supposed to, what everyone's supposed to be doing on the floor. It's not like you have one job. You have several jobs. That's what kind of got me started in just being involved in athletics. He assisted Watsika's Keith Baldwin for 3 years until he took over Niantic Harristown's basketball program in 1986. Moss never had a losing season at Niantic Harristown in all those 8 seasons there. I thought he was one of the best coaches in the area, said former Niantic player and current Sangamon Valley coach Josh Myers. I just wanted to learn from him. He's the first one that got me into coaching. Unfortunately for Myers, Moss transferred to Monticello after his sophomore year. Moss won 4 regionals and 1 sectional with the Sages. Altogether, he's managed a 342-210 record in 20 years as head coach. 342-210. It's been good to see our teams be successful and just be a part of it, Moss said. I just enjoy watching the student athletes compete and like to see them grow. Players revered Moss because of his personal approach to coaching basketball. It was not uncommon for him to invite players home for dinner. He really cared about his players, said former Monticello guard Aaron Thays. He wanted everyone to be as close as family as possible. He wanted it to be a family-oriented environment. Myers referred to Moss as a father figure. You knew he cared, Myers said. He would come in and yell at you or praise when you did something great. Regardless, the next day he'd talk to you and make sure you're doing okay. Even as athletic director, Moss made sure he devoted his time to each extracurricular activity. Randy's always been a supporter of all our athletics and activities, Monticello Superintendent Vic Zimmerman said. I'm excited for him to be retiring happy and healthy. Anyone that's been at this position for as long as Randy is hard to replace. He'll be missed. But he was Coach Moss in the gym. He was tough, which is good, Myers said. Being with him in camps and practices, he really was intense and focused on what he wanted to get done and let you know when you messed up. The good thing about him was he meant well and wanted to make you better. That they said Moss was all business, not just as a coach, but also as an athletic director. He was able to balance both roles because of his organization and attention to detail. Thays can attest to it because he married one of Moss's daughters, Ashley. Our 3-year-old daughter is talking about how she needs to be organized, Tez says. That's trickle-down effect for him because he passed that to Ashley and Ashley's passed that to her. In order to be an athletic director, Moss said you have to be organized. That's what allowed him to be so active. He served on IHSA ad hoc committees in the Illinois Athletic Directors Association for more than 20 years. Moss was never afraid to speak his mind on a range of issues, and that's still true today. He's seen fewer 3-sport athletes over the years and wished the trend were different. I think overall they become better athletes. They get themselves in a situation where they can play with adversity. They're not the best players, so how do they respond to situations? I still think that's the way to go because there's not a tremendous number, especially at schools like Monticello's size, that have a lot of kids to go on to play Division I athletics anywhere. Very seldom does it happen. He also dislikes IHSA's current class system. He'd like to revert back to the simpler Class A and AA days. I wasn't a 4-class kind of guy, Moss said. I'm still not. Most of all, he opposes the ongoing conference changes as something that undermined a once mighty OCA Valley Conference. It will merge into the new Illini Prairie Conference in 2017. That's probably been the only downfall for the last few years of my career is the changing of the conferences, Moss said. There was ever a black eye. That's probably the black eye because I enjoy our OCA Valley Conference when we had those 12 teams in there. We had good relationships with those people, and we still do. Football is clearly at the root of the problem, Moss said. Schools are leaving their respective conferences for a better chance to reach the coveted playoffs. Now you just don't know how long these conferences are going to stay together anymore, Moss said. It's kind of like you never know which NBA player is going to be on what team next year, this year or next year. Loyalty of it all, that's what irritates me. Loyalty to the conference or loyalty to your team, That's changed a lot. That's why he supports the IHSA to step in and enforce divisions solely for football while the conferences stay intact for all the other sports. But that proposal was shot down by the ISHA last year. He also touts open enrollment for all schools, and that high school students may attend any school. If they choose to go out of district, they would have to pay tuition. Perhaps that would solve IHSA's other issues. But Moss is skeptical that that would pass, too. He jokingly calls it the Randy Moss philosophy. Kind of a radical idea, don't you think, Moss? But Moss said. It's kind of a radical idea, don't you think, Moss said, but I think sometimes you have to look outside the box. It'd be very interesting to see. Even if he doesn't like the statewide trends, Moss doesn't take them personally. He understands everyone's only looking out for their own best interests, even if that means Okaw Valley's demise. I don't think it was ever really heated, Moss said. Everybody's looking out for their own schools, and I understand that. You just hate for it to break up. You're disappointed, but I wouldn't say it was ever heated. And that's the end of that article about this retiring coach and director. Quick note, Eugene, Oregon. Oregon tops Illinois to make golf finals. The Illini men's golf closed out one of the most successful seasons in program history on Tuesday, falling to Oregon 3-2-0 in the national championship semifinal match. I thought Oregon played great, Illinois coach Mike Small said. They made a lot of shots from off the green. They knew what they were doing and where to go. They made a lot of putts, and you have to do that in a short match like this. It all came down to the final two matches on Tuesday evening as the Illini were vying for a spot in today's final match. Oregon, number 26 in the NCAA ranking, goes into the tournament, knocked off Illinois behind Solomon Raza's one-up victory against Charlie Danielson, whose birdie putt to extend the match swirled around the cup. The Ducks will take on number one Texas. Texas will be going for its fourth NCAA golf title and second in 5 years. It also won in 2012 at Riviera with a team that featured freshman Jordan Spieth. End of that note. Mattoon softball wins, returns to Sweet 16. This is by Justin Rust, Lee News Service writer. Mattoon. Last season, the Mattoon softball team found itself in an unfamiliar position. Springfield Sacred Heart Griffin beat the Green Waves in the regional finals, keeping Mattoon out of the Sweet 16 for only the second time since the IHSA went to four classes in softball in 2008. The Green Wave are back in familiar position after Tuesday's game against Chatham Glenwood. Mattoon pulled away from a 1-1 tie in the third inning with three runs and went on to beat the Titans 6-1 in the Class 3A sectional semifinals on Tuesday. The win punches Mattoon's ticket back to the Sweet 16 a year after being absent. So good to be back, Mattoon coach Amy Hines said. There's some things that we were going to have to work on this week, and I thought it was a little scrappy, but it was good to see the girls come out, get the runs on the board. I was so proud the way they played today. It feels good going this far and having these nine seniors. We knew we were going to be tough this year. As long as we bring our bats and show up on the defense, we'll be able to keep going. End of that article. We'll end section two here with some day by day on this date, June 1st. In 1792, Kentucky became the 15th state of the Union. In 1796, Tennessee became the 16th state. In 1813, the mortally wounded commander of the USS Chesapeake, Captain James Lawrence, gave the order, "Don't give up the ship," during a losing battle with the British frigate HMS Shannon in the War of 1812. In 1868, James Buchanan, the 15th president of the United States, died near Lancaster, Pennsylvania, at age 77. In 1915, the T.S. Eliot poem, The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, was first published in Poetry, a magazine of verse in Chicago. In 1926, actress Marilyn Monroe was born Norma Jean Mortensen in Los Angeles. Finishing off this section and of dates and of section two is this fact. In 1968, Author-lecturer Helen Keller, who earned a college degree despite being blind and deaf almost all her life, died in Westport, Connecticut at age 87. This concludes the Herald and Review e-edition from Decatur on Wednesday, June 1st, 2016. This is Debbie saying, talk to you again soon.